Well, I had been teaching on having effective conversation for some time when I thought, you know, I should probably look around online and see what other people have to say because I'm not the first person to ever think about this issue. So I started looking around online and I found that indeed other people had written on this, no surprise, but I found an article that was entitled, How to Convert Atheists. All right, that sounds pretty interesting, right? So I decided I was going to check this out. And as I looked at the article, I found that it was written by an atheist. So now I'm hooked. You've got my attention. I want to hear what you have to say. So I started reading through this article, and I noticed that I agreed with him on several points. But tonight, I wanted to share with you two of his points that really stuck out to me about having conversation with people who have different views from you. Now, these two points, they're going to be life-changing. Are you ready? I'm sharing this with you. These two really resonated with me. And here they are. Yeah, be realistic and don't be stupid. So now, why would I pick those two? Well, the first one, be realistic. I think he makes a great point here in that people that you talk to about belief in God, or if you're not a believer in God and you're here tonight, just anybody you talk to that differs with you about belief, a lot of times they're well entrenched in their own worldview. They have either been brought up that way, they have a tradition that they're coming from, there's, you know, their family took them to church, or maybe their family never took them to church. So they may be well entrenched in the view that they hold. So you need to be realistic about your expectation about what's going to happen in a conversation with someone who disagrees with me, right? I have found a lot of times when I'm talking to people, sometimes it's just it's that first encounter that they have with a Christian who's willing to just kind of talk to them about belief in God rather than try to tell them what to believe. So be realistic. People may not come to a decision right there in that moment. And I've seen people take years, as I'm sure you also have seen. Sometimes it takes people years to change their mind on an issue or on a belief. So be realistic. The second one was don't be stupid. Now, what does he mean, don't be stupid? Well, let's look at what he means. He has this to say. He says, persuading atheists is kind of like picking up chicks. You're 80% of the way there if you just avoid the really big mistakes that most people make. Most of what you have to do is just not be stupid. There it is again. Now, I'll tell you, I've been married to my husband for 22 years, so I don't know much about picking up chicks. But I do know that we do tend to make a lot of mistakes when we're talking to people about our beliefs. So tonight, instead of focusing down on the mistakes, what I'm going to do is remind you of four basic elements of conversation that you already know, but I'm just going to remind you of these so that you can have a better conversation using these. And the elements are know, listen, question, and respond. So we're just going to walk through those real quickly here tonight, these four elements for having better conversation. Let's start out with know. What is it that Christians should know to have a better conversation? Well, Christians should be able to clearly state their Christian beliefs, right? They should be able to clearly state what they believe. I break this down further into two areas. We should be able to say, why do I believe in God? And then we should also be able to say, what do I believe about God? Okay, those are vital. And the reason these two areas are vital is, one, let me quote C.S. Lewis first. Let me give you a quote from him from Mere Christianity. He says, he admonishes Christians, if once you have accepted Christianity, then some of its main doctrines shall be deliberately held before your mind for some time every day. And then he says, this is why we need to do daily praying. This is why we need to read religious reading and church going. These are why these things are necessary parts of our life. He says, we have to be continually reminded of what we believe. Neither this belief, referring to Christianity, nor any other will automatically remain alive in the mind. Right? None of these beliefs will remain alive in the mind. We have to be continually reminded of what we believe. And he says, as a matter of fact, if you examined 100 people who had lost their faith in Christianity, I wonder how many of them would have turned out to be reasoned out of it by honest argument. Do not most people simply drift away? So we need to know what it is that we believe and why we believe it. Another reason we should know why we believe in God is coming straight from the passage in 1 Peter 3:15, in which Peter's speaking to a group of persecuted Christians who apparently are fearing people around. We don't know if they what the persecution was, if it was verbal, if it was just an uncomfortable situation for them to be Christian in that context, but they were obviously fearing the wrong thing. So Peter tells them in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give a defense. That's the word apologia, where we get apologetics. Always be prepared to give a defense, make a case for the reason of your hope. He admonishes them to be ready to give reasons for why they believe in Jesus Christ, why they believe in the resurrected Jesus, their hope. Our cultures are changing. I include North America there, America and Canada. It's becoming more and more conflicted about truth and what truth is, and less tolerant of opposing views. We're becoming more polarized, as a matter of fact. As our culture changes, we need to face head-on what we really believe in order to prepare for these changes. What I mean is that it's a luxury of the past where we could assume that people understood basic Christianity or understood some basic things about Christianity. And in fact, I have shared this last night. I'm an example of that. I grew up outside of the church. I never went to church with my family except for, I think, when I was very, very little. But we didn't talk about Christian things. We didn't read the Bible. I wasn't exposed to Christianity. And so if you had told me I needed to be saved, I would have no idea what that meant. I just wasn't exposed to this. So people are lacking a basic understanding of Christianity. And so what we need to do is we need to be ready to help them understand why we believe in God and what it is, those things that we believe about God. So that's the second one. Why do we believe? Be ready to give that. This here's why. And then secondly, what it is. So I've put up on the screen essential Christian doctrines. That's not the only thing we need to know. I think it's important to know our history as well, because there's a lot of the questions that are being asked today were asked in the past and we're repeating them. But essential Christian doctrines are vital for the what. You see a couple recommendations up there on the screen. One of them is a very short book by Paul E. Little called Know What You Believe, and it walks you through some of the basic doctrines. Another book, which is not so little, in fact, you can use it for a doorstop as well as for a book on theology, Wayne Grudem's Systematic Theology. And it's my belief that just like, and I'm going to date myself with this, but just like we used to have encyclopedias in our house, in our homes, you say, a lot of you are looking at me like, what? You are old. We used to have, if you could afford them, we'd get a set of encyclopedias in our house. And if you have to do a paper on some subject, you would go to the encyclopedia. If you didn't have them in your home, you had to go to the library, right? Just like we used to have that for reference, we should have theology books around our homes, right? Basic Christian doctrine, access to these basic Christian doctrines in our homes as Christians. So I've put a recommendation up there. There are others, but I think we really should consider having this. In fact, my daughter, she used to, when she'd argue with people about belief in God, or when people would ask her a question, she'd say, Mom, where's the Grudem? I need the Grudem. It's not on the shelf. Go get it. Where'd you put it? And what a systematic theology book will do for you is it's an organized study of God. So what is the question you're looking for? You can go to that chapter and you can figure out, you know, this is what we're dealing with. So it's very important. And then it's so important because that we know these two areas, because we generally don't talk about things we're not confident about. Right? We generally don't engage people in subjects of which we're not confident in. Now, I say this having come up from America in our current political climate. There's a lot of people talking about stuff that they don't know much about, right? So, thank you. I didn't expect that to get a clap. But so I say this generally. Generally, people are not going to talk about subjects that they're not confident in, and especially so when it's something as important to them as belief in God. So we need to know what we believe and why we believe it. Now, why do I think, that's not the only reason I think that Christians are not getting into more conversations. So why else do I think that? Well, I think the first one is that we don't know what we believe. We're not studying our faith. We're not bringing it into our homes and discussing it around the table. We're not teaching it to our kids. This isn't our conversation, so we're not confident. And then secondly, I think we're a little fearful of the unknown. What am I going to say if? And a lot of questions we'll get, especially I'll get at Q&A, is, well, what do I say to a person who asks this? Or what do I say if this happens? There's a great way to get past that. It's to start talking to people and see what happens if, right? If that happens, if you get into a conversation and you don't know what to say, see what you do. You can learn from having failures and successes in conversation. So they're fearful of the unknown. And then they're putting too much burden on themselves. I just spent the first point on talking that you need to know the faith, right? Because you generally don't talk about things that you're not confident in. But I think we put too much burden on ourselves to have all the answers before we try to talk to people about our belief in God. And I think the second point here will help you break past that. You don't have to have all the answers. There's only one who has all the answers, and that is God. And hopefully you don't think that you need to be God for anyone, right? So we just need to, we're putting too much burden on ourselves by thinking we have to have all those answers. So the second element, which is listen, will help us to take some of that burden off because we're going to listen to other people. We're going to listen to others. Now, this element is probably most important and probably one of the hardest for us. And I think it's one of the hardest because we tend to over-assess our skills in this area. I know that I do. I've been teaching conversation and having conversations for quite a while, and yet I'm still not a very good listener. I'll break in when people are talking. I'll break into their sentences. I will listen for the purpose of responding to them rather than for really hearing what they're trying to say. So I know that I still have work in this area. In fact, this area of listening is so important that Dietrich Bonhoeffer calls it the ministry of listening in his book, Life Together. He talks about how Christians often think that their only service is to have to offer people something when they come together. And he said they forget that listening can be a greater service than speaking. Many times people seek a sympathetic ear and do not find it among the Christians because these Christians are talking when they should be listening. So let's flesh this point out further, the ministry of listening. What is its purpose? What are we doing, right? We're not just listening to listen. We're listening to serve others. When we listen to another person, to hear what they have to say, it shows that we value them. It shows that we value them as a human being. It humanizes them to hear them out, showing respect for them as being a person made in the image of God. So that's important. It's to serve them. It's to be accountable. Through listening to others, our thoughts are checked against the thoughts of other people. And this is so important so that we do not become pigeonholed in our ideas and think much of ourselves, because that is foolishness. In fact, there's a passage of scripture, Proverbs 26, 1 through 12, in which you get a description by the author of a fool, and he sets up this very derogatory image for you of who the fool is. It's a person that you would never hope to become. But he's not just setting up the image of a fool to merely describe the foolish person. He is going to make a shocking statement by the time he gets to verse 12. He says, "Do you see a man who is wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him." It always stuns me when I meet a person who seems to believe that they have everything figured out. They won't listen to others. They won't take correction or constructive criticism. There's no accountability for their beliefs. The author here in Proverbs is warning against that kind of pride. Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to advice." And I can tell you, I've taken advice from people who disagree with me. And when I take their advice, I listen to what they have to say. I see if it has some merit. And if it does, I utilize it. And it makes my arguments better to listen to criticism of what I have to say. Proverbs 18:2 says, "A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his own opinion, right? We don't want to be those people. We want to listen. We want to take those constructive criticisms so that we get better at our conversation. The third purpose is to avoid spreading untruth. This concept is simple, but it can be life-changing. We need to listen with the express purpose of understanding the other person's point of view the way they understand their point of view. Okay? We need to listen with the express purpose of trying to understand their view the way that they understand it. You don't have to agree with them, but you should never try to make their argument fit what you want it to so that you can argue against it. Right? Then this can happen. If you think about it, you know, you can learn some things about worldviews. You can learn about Buddhism or atheism. And then you can talk to a person that adheres to one of those worldviews, and you can start arguing from what you know rather than from what that person actually believes. And from my experience in talking with Muslims, every time I've talked to a different person, I've gotten different views. So I need to find out what that person in front of me believes and not try to change it to fit what I know or try to change the argument in any way to reduce it so I can attack it. What's wrong with doing that? Well, it's misrepresenting someone's view. Even if we're just one-on-one, it's misrepresenting their view. And what's wrong with doing that? It's making a false statement or giving false testimony. It's an untruth. And untruths never lead us back towards God, the author of truth. In fact, 1 Corinthians 13 tells us that we are to love or delight in the truth, right? Love does not rejoice with evil, but delights in the truth. Isn't that interesting contrast? We're to be lovers of the truth there. So listening to understand requires much more than just giving people their turn to talk. It means we need to truly hear their argument, truly hear them in order to better minister to them. And then it also the purpose is to find points of communication. And this is what I was mentioning in the first point, which was that we put too much burden on ourselves to know everything, and we can't know everything. So what we need to do is we need to listen to the person to find where we have some common ground, where we have some common knowledge, and we can discuss that. Instead of worrying about what you will say, ask questions to let the other person talk. As they're discussing their views with you, find areas where you both have knowledge and discuss those. People are generally more interested in discussing topics of which they have knowledge. So when you're listening to minister, you will find what you can discuss. I was coming back from Los Angeles on a flight, and there was a guy coming towards my row who was all dressed in black, and he had his hair pulled back. And okay, so here's another dating reference here, a reference that will date me. He looked like Willie Nelson. Does anybody? Okay, there's a few laughs. Thank you. Appreciate it. So he's coming at me, and he comes down into my row, and he sits over there near the window, and he quickly takes his phone, and he starts talking on his phone like this, and like he doesn't want to be bugged by anybody. The guy over here is asleep, so I figure I'm in the middle, so I figure I'll just read a book. So I pull out a textbook for my class. I'm coming back from school, and it's The Divine Conspiracy by Dallas Willard. I'm reading, and all of a sudden I hear, "Hey, that looks interesting. What's that about?" This guy, Willie Nelson, he's talking to me. So I got caught off guard. I didn't know what to say. And I said something crazy. You remember I said, like, you're going to have failures when you talk? I said something crazy. I said, well, it is a conspiracy. God's after you for himself. What does that mean? This guy said, oh, so you're a Christian. I don't know how he got that, but I said, oh, yes, what are you? And he says, I'm a Buddhist. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I've learned a little bit about Buddhism. but do I know his, right? Do I know the person in front of me? Not really, I don't know his views. So I said, hey, I don't know much about Buddhism. Why don't you tell me what you believe? So he starts talking, he lights up like a Christmas tree, starts telling me all sorts of stuff about Buddhism. And he says, there is no right or wrong, there just is. Point of communication, that seems important to me. So I filed that one away. And we were discussing many things, and he got to politics. And he mentioned to me that the war in Iraq was wrong. And I said, hey, can I ask you a question about that? Yeah, sure. I said, how does a guy who says there's no right or wrong believe that the war in Iraq is adamantly so wrong? And that was the first time he stopped talking. And he just looked at me. Right? And he looked at me and he said, I don't know. Right? I don't know. See, I think many times we miss these kind of things because we're too busy being defensive. Right? We're too busy being defensive. And explaining why it can be difficult to reason with some people, Dallas Willard, who I was reading at the time, Dallas Willard says that their very mind has been taken over by one or more feelings and is made to defend and serve those feelings at all costs, right? When your feelings take over, when you get defensive in a conversation, that's what your mind is focused on, not on the argument, not on ministering to the person, not on really hearing what they're saying. So you miss some of this stuff, right? But good listening takes practice. And like I said, I'm still learning to listen. I still butt into conversations inappropriately and such. So it takes practice. So you got to throw yourself into the conversation and see how you do. Have some failures, some divine conspiracy moments, and then have some successes. And then, so the third element that we're going to use for effective conversation is to question. And Christians really should be asking a lot more questions. They should be asking a lot more questions. We usually try to give a lot of answers and respond, do a lot of responding, but I think we need to engage in questioning more things about what others believe and why they believe them. Christians should ask more questions for many reasons. I'm not going to go into these in detail because my colleague Andy, when he comes out, he will be going into more of this, but it does model our Lord to ask questions of people. It avoids assumptions. So it avoids assuming, you know, what kind of Buddhist he is. It avoids assuming on his views from what I know. So it helps you to avoid assumptions. And then it uncovers and discovers truth. You might actually assume something the person doesn't mean, and so you're not going to get to the truth of what they believe. It also helps the person to uncover what their beliefs really are. Okay, so by asking questions, you're not only helping you to minister to them, you're not only helping yourself understand them, you're actually helping the other person understand their own views because they're going to have to respond to you. They're going to have to work through their views. So that's very important. All right. One of the reasons this is so important is because by asking questions, we're going to find out about their story. We're going to find out not only what they mean, what they believe, we're also going to find out how they got there. And this is important because as Tim Muehlhoff, who wrote this great book on conversation, I Beg to Differ, as he says, people tend to only trade conclusions, not how the parties arrived at those conclusions. Right? That backstory is going to be part of how we minister to them. Because nobody holds their beliefs in a vacuum. Right? There's a story of how they got there. So that'll help us along the way to minister to them. So some questions that we can ask, and again, I'm going to use these briefly because you're going to get a little bit more of this in the next session. First question I tend to ask people is, what do you mean by that? That's a clarifying question, so it helps to avoid assumptions. Chance for them to clarify their statement. And then how do you know that? Not only do I want to give them a chance to clarify, but I also want to give them a chance to tell me their sources. Where is this coming from? Like, I'll say, where are you getting that from? That's a very important one because I find more and more that people, as they leave an authority, like maybe they're leaving belief in God as a transcendent moral authority, what's the source they're putting in place? Right? They're leaving it, but what's filling the void? So I want to know what that source is. So where are you getting that from? Because in our culture, we tend to repeat a lot of things. A lot of times we're getting sound bites, but not necessarily deep thought on these issues. And so clarifying question, what do you mean by that? Asking them where it's coming from, a sourcing question. And then finally, I want to know why you believe that. So that's that question that goes back to, I want to know the story behind it. How did you get to this point? How did you conclude that? Right? Many people are well entrenched in their views. So is this something that you were raised with? Is this something that you've never questioned? Or how do you know these or things? Or why did you get to this point where you believe them to be true? So clarify, then take a source question. You know, where is that coming from? So maybe I can go read it too. And then why have you committed to this? Those are important questions, and it'll help you hopefully get to the point where you can better minister because you're going to get maybe a chance at a poetic moment with them. I've borrowed that from Tim Muehlhoff. A poetic moment is a peek into their soul. What happened in the past? What brought you to this point? What convinced you along the way? I was, another plane story, because these poor people that fly on planes with me, I was sitting next to a gentleman. I was actually getting strep throat at the time and didn't know it. So I was trying to sleep on the plane, and for some reason I wouldn't go to sleep. I kept waking up. So finally I just resigned to answer some Q&A from the session that I was just coming from. And the guy next to me was a nervous flyer. So he looked over and he looked at what I was typing, and I was working on the who made God type question. And he said, "Well, that looks interesting. What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I'm a Christian apologist. I make arguments for the existence of God." By the way, that gets two reactions, basically. Usually it gets I heard Christian in there. Out. Peace out. Or it gets like a what? What is that? So I said, "I make arguments for the existence of God." And he said, "Oh, that's interesting." And then he said, "There is no empirical evidence for God." Just laid it out there at me. He doesn't know me, right? And all of a sudden he's using these big words. Like empirical. And the first thing I thought was, wow, he's using big words with me. I bet this has worked before. So I'm thinking, should I refute this? Should I go into philosophy? What should I do? And then I went back to my own study, Why Do You Believe That?, which teaches these questions. And I said, no, ask him a question. What do you mean by that? Right? Because two reasons. I want him to be able to clarify what he said, right? I don't want to assume anything. Secondly, I used to be a public school teacher, and if you're going to use the word, you better know what it means. So I asked him, it was really the first one, what do you mean by that? And he said, we can only know what our senses tell us. I thought, hey, all right, you know, he's close. That's good. You know, through empirical evidence, through observation. So you're going to get that through your senses. We're good. So then I still wanted to go into philosophy. Oh, that's David Hume, blah, blah, blah. And then I said, no, how do you know that? How do you know that? And this was his response. We're two questions in, and he's done. Right? Two questions in. You see, you're reading the next one. Yeah. So I changed it up a little. What is your grounding for thinking your senses are giving you truth about reality? I asked him nicely. I wasn't being antagonistic. And he just cussed me out, and they were big cuss words. People were turning around and looking at me and him because we were in the middle of the plane. But he said, I don't know. So I talked to him about this, and I said, you know, would you mind if I gave you my idea for why I think our senses are giving us truth about reality? I went into some argument from a personal creator, and then he sort of nodded at me and somewhat agreed, and then he said, he changed the argument to, but the Bible is horribly corrupted, or something like that. And I said, well, I've got a PowerPoint on that one. And he cussed again and said, oh, of all the people I could have sat next to. And it was a Southwest Airlines flight. I don't know if you have ever flown Southwest, but you pick your seats when you're on the plane, right? There's no assigned seating. So I said, just remember, you chose me. So we were having a good time. Anyway, because I asked him questions, because I was willing to follow him and chase down these thoughts, he told me, he said, well, you know, I was raised Catholic. And one time in our Catholic school, I asked a hard question to the nun that was teaching. And she said to me, you don't have enough faith. That was her response. Now, I've heard stories like this, but I haven't heard one directly told to me. And I said, well, she was wrong. She couldn't know that. She should have answered your question. Right? He gave me a poetic moment. My guess is from that point on, that impressionable young child had decided, he had decided his trajectory towards leaving Christianity and these people who wouldn't answer questions behind. Right? And this guy was in his 50s. He was a well-to-do businessman. So he gave me a poetic moment because I was willing to just engage him in conversation, listen to him, dialogue with him, ask him questions. He actually followed me down to baggage claim and said he didn't know what to do after. I said, it's going to be okay. I gave him my information and gave him a dude hug and sent him on his way. You're going to be all right. All right. So if you're not that, I mean, maybe your style's a little differently. You're not that direct with your questions. So you may say something like, well, have you ever considered that? Or can you help me with something? Like, how can a Buddhist say there's no right or wrong, but there's something they believe is wrong? All right, and then our final element that we want to throw in here is to respond, of course, right? We need to be able to respond. So we need to know, listen, question people, and then we have to be ready to give responses. Now, there's so many kinds of responses you can give, but I'm just going to give you a few ideas that maybe you've thought of or not. All right, so the first one is to discuss a problematic statement. Show the person problems with their statement. People often commit errors in reasoning when they're talking with you. In fact, I teach a logic class at Houston Baptist University, and I teach the material fallacies. And the material fallacies, where there's an error in our reasoning due to the content of what we're saying, we commit those probably every day. In fact, I tell my students, you'll probably catch me in one almost every class because they're that prominent in our society. So it's very good to learn what these are and point them out. In fact, my study, Why Do You Believe That?, I insert in there some of these material fallacies that are most commonly coming at Christians, like ad hominem, where they're attacking the person instead of the argument. Genetic fallacy, where they say the argument's wrong because it comes from a Christian. That's a genetic fallacy. It's an error in reasoning. So there's a few of those in there. But then there's also this next book, The Fallacy Detective, which the authors wrote this from preteen through, they say, going to see the Lord. And it'll teach you one material fallacy per chapter and then quiz you on it. So it's wonderful. You'll learn to be the most annoying person in your circle of friends. That was black or white. That's a too quote. You'll just be going on and on. But it helps you in your conversations because you start to see these errors in reasoning. You start to see what's an actual argument and what's just maybe an attack on you. So discuss a problematic statement. Answer sincere questions. It's so important. This goes back to the guy who was sitting next to me, right? He had a sincere question he asked, I'm assuming, and it wasn't answered, right? That can do a lot of damage to a person. So make sure you answer sincere questions and don't just brush people off. And the next one, demonstrate honesty. If you don't know an answer to something, then don't make something up. You're going to have to tell them, I don't know. You're going to have to eat some humble pie and just say, you know what? I don't know the answer to that. I've had to do that in front of audiences. Well, thank you for that question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm willing to find out if you want to stay in contact. I said that to one audience, just not thinking anything of it other than, hey, I don't know. And I found out later on there was an audience member who said to the host afterwards, in 30 years, I've never heard a Christian say, I don't know something. And she grossly mistrusted the church because of that, right? You just don't know the power of just basic honesty with people. So demonstrate honesty. And then finally, Exercise discernment. Do not spend a large amount of time with an intellectually dishonest person. So how do you determine that? That's hard because it takes practice. That's why I keep saying, get out there, start having conversations. Others should be, here's some ideas though. Others should be willing to answer your questions. They should listen to your responses, and they should interact with your responses, right? Not move the argument around to everything that they've heard against Christianity ever, right? They should stick with what you're talking about. If they won't do that, you need to remember that it's not you and I that do the saving, right? It's not us. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. We have the command to go out and share what we believe, to share the good news, to share the truth of Jesus Christ, but we don't do the saving. So if you get into a situation with somebody who's not wanting to stay on that target, who's not being intellectually honest with you, then move along, right? Exercise some discernment. You only get so long on this earth, so you're going to have to make some judgments there. All right, so our four elements of conversation were know, listen, question, and respond. And I want to remind you that though I've had some fun and told you some of my stories, that the reason that we talk to people is always out of a love of our fellow mankind, right? So that 1 Peter 3:15 passage, we don't just tell them the reason. We don't just give a defense of the reason of our hope, but we do it with gentleness and respect. And we do that because these are our fellow human beings, right? We don't want to polarize. We don't want to marginalize. We want to love and love greatly. All right, guys. So in wrapping up, I'm told that there are some great books I should tell you about out there. Of course, right? So I'll tell you about mine, which are up there. And that is, I have two studies up there, Why Do You Believe That? And Living in Truth. Unfortunately, last night, they bought them all up. So my two studies, you can get them on through lifeway.com or Amazon, and they're introductions to apologetics. Why Do You Believe That? Goes right through what we did, but in more detail. But I have some other books out there, they look like this. See, they're on that screen too, right? And if you want to get In Defense of the Bible, Come Let Us Reason, or A New Kind of Apologist, you can get so much more apologetics, and I've contributed to each one of these. I would highly recommend New Kind of Apologist, which deals with some of the current issues of our day, some of the current hot topics that we face in both of our countries. And so this is a really good one, and it does it from an apologetics perspective. So again, thank you so much. I appreciate your attention. I'm so glad that I got to come back up here with you in the Pacific Northwest. It's 40 degrees cooler here. I kid you not. So thank you. God bless you. And I'm looking forward to Q&A.